Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So yesterday I received a letter from King David, and it reads something. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but it's a Dear King David Community, Past and Present. The King David school system is grounded in transparency and integrity, with a student well-being at its core. Therefore, we are writing to inform you of an allegation of historical sexual abuse of a former pupil at King David Linksfield High School between 1982 and 1983, and the steps that we have taken to support this person who has recently reported his traumatic experience to the South African Jewish Board of Education. Irrespective of the passage of 40 years, the South African Jewish Board of Education takes allegations of this nature extremely seriously. The allegations concern the conduct of two former King David Linksfield High School teachers during that period, and is alleged to have occurred when the former pupil was a boarder in the hostel. He contends that their conduct affected more students at the time. We are deeply saddened and shocked by these allegations in light of the seriousness of the issue. The South African Jewish Board of Education have supported this former pupil in opening a criminal charge case with the police against the alleged perpetrators. In addition, the South African Jewish Board of Education has engaged with lawyers and ISASA to ensure that we leave no room for error in seeking to ensure that these claims are investigated properly and ultimately that justice is done. And the letter signed by Rabbi Ricky Seif, General Director, as well as Alan Joffe, who is the chairman. Joining us in a studio is Rabbi Ricky Seif. He, in fact, his team reached out to us to have the conversation. And I think that is important to note, that it is a clearly part of a willingness to be transparent. They reached out to us to have the conversation, for it to in fact reach more people and to provide a little bit more of an understanding and of a background into this event. Rabbi Ricky Seif, good morning. And here morning. You are again.
Good morning. Thank you.
Lovely, you know, we could do without some of this kind of news.
I've been here way too often over the last couple of months.
So. Listen, the truth is that you're dealing with things, and you're dealing with them in an open way. This is probably one of the more difficult things to deal with. Number one, it's a subject that certainly makes many of us uncomfortable, makes me uncomfortable. Number two, it is... There's a tremendous amount of time that has passed, which has got to make it more complicated. And number three, memory is a very, very difficult thing to really wade through. So can we just start with some of the basics, just to give people some kind of an understanding? When did this person come forward? When did this come to light?
So Howard, the victim came forward a number of months ago. We'd been in conversation with the person for some time, really just discussing the case. He had been giving us information, and eventually it got to a point where we realized, you know, we have to take the next step. And that next step was him actually submitting us an affidavit to SABGE and us going forward with him to open this case at the police. So it's been a number of months already now that we've been engaging with this person.
Can I just be clear on that? There's no prescription when it comes to this type of allegation or crime, is that right?
That's correct, and particularly in cases of sexual abuse, there's no prescription. The complication was that this victim actually lived overseas, or does currently live overseas, and the person has to be here in person in order to open the case. That was one of the challenges that we faced. Together we managed to do that, to bring him out and to open the case in South Africa.
And obviously, if he's opening a criminal case, then the perpetrator, the alleged perpetrator, is still alive.
So to the best of our knowledge, that is the case. This particular person, the victim, has really done a lot on his side to investigate, and to he's actually reached out to these people over the last couple of months and years. So as it stands now, we believe that they are alive, they are in South Africa, and hence we kind of pushing forward very, very strongly with this case.
As you say, he's reached out to them. They've had contact then, obviously.
It appears so, yes.
Wow. That also makes it a... I would imagine in an attempt to try and deal with some of the impact of these events.
To deal with the impact of the events and to see if, you know, these people actually admit to wrongdoing that they've done. One thing in really dealing with this person, Howard, is you see the depth of pain of people who've been abused, even with the passage of many decades. And this is a very painful, very real thing for these victims. And therefore, it's important that justice is done and they're supported through these processes.
You speak about victims. Do you have any sense of how many people could have been impacted to a greater or less extent?
So we don't. We don't. This person does allege that there were others. We haven't been contacted by others. He alleges there were more, particularly as it happened in a hostel. It's alleged to have happened in the hostel. So that's also one of the reasons we reached out, is so that other people, if there were, could actually come forward and, you know, really disclose what happened, share their cases, and lead to strengthen this particular case.
Are you concerned that it opens up other areas where there could be feelings of discomfort, but in fact not criminal cases and things like that, that this just becomes this groundswell of conversation?
Definitely. I think when the board was deliberating on this, Howard, it was quite clear to us that could happen. What you just described. Who knows what's going to come forward? Who knows what skeletons are in the closet? But the truth is, I think as an organization like ours, we play a prominent role in the community. We have a duty of care. And therefore, it's our responsibility to be transparent around these things and not to hide behind them, as many organizations may do. We don't think it's appropriate to ignore or to minimize allegations that are this serious, So I think it may appear strange on some level that we came forward. But I think for two reasons here. Number one, as I mentioned, our organization is a prominent organization, a duty of care to students. So what are we minimizing? We must take this forward. And if these people are out there and they found guilty, then they must be prosecuted. So really, it's in that vein of transparency and wanting to really come forward and support victims. The second is we want to send a strong message to our current stakeholders that abuse is not tolerable in any shape or form. We want our staff to know that we take a zero tolerance approach to these things. We want our parents to know that that's the case. We want future employees who are thinking of coming to King David with, if they have any nefarious intent, we will
this is
not.
This is not a place.
This
for
is not
you.
The place for you to work. Right, exactly. Right. Exactly.
And I think that message is important. Part of it that I'm struggling with, and is maybe because I was a teenager in the 80s, and we were actually talking about it on air a little bit earlier. It was a very different time. And of course, there's no excuse for this. I'm not for one second making excuses. But to some extent, our parents had no clue. I don't think we had the vocabulary to come home and say, this is a problem, this is making me uncomfortable. There's little doubt, and I wasn't at King David, I was at another school, but at Yeshiva, but there's no doubt that the way in which teachers were allowed to behave back then in the 80s created an environment where the lines were very, very blurred. We're looking at this in a 2026 way where we are very, very attuned and sensitive to it. How do we reach back and understand context? And do we even need to? Because maybe it doesn't matter. if somebody is hurt and wounded and damaged by somebody else, then that's all that matters. I'm struggling with this, and it's a very ineloquent question. I can't even verbalize it properly. Maybe you can help me through it.
I think exactly what you've said is the reality. It was a time of people didn't talk. I think first it's important to say that abuse victims, and often those that may actually be groomed by teachers, particularly if they are themselves children and the person grooming them as an adult, are actually not sure how to deal with those feelings, not sure how to verbalize what those feelings are. So often, even in current times, that's often the case where victims don't always readily just speak up naturally. I think that's important to say, and I don't think that's changed over the passage of time. But there's no doubt that it was a different era. Parents didn't talk. Children spoke less to parents. I do believe that there was more silence around these things back in those days than they are now. And thank God what we're trying to do is inculcate in our students, in our system. Today, parents, we should know, are not scared to speak their minds. So parents definitely are not quiet anymore.
You maybe wish they were a little bit more reticent.
Yeah. Parents are way more involved than they used to be in the past. But we're trying to create a system now where, God forbid, if this is happening, that people can speak about it, to nip it in the bud, to make sure that, criminals of this nature are dealt with immediately and that these things don't fester and harm people. So there's no doubt it was a different era. And I suppose our duty is forward-looking. How do we make sure this doesn't happen in the future?
What is your biggest duty to the victim? I mean, what is... Again, given the fact that it's 40 years later, what is the priority from the South African Jewish Board of Education with regard to the victim himself or herself?
So for us, that has been support. We really have been trying as best as we can to support the victim, bringing them out to South Africa, opening the case with them, speaking to SACE to make sure that if these people are still actually even in the teaching profession, that they should be barred. So we're really just trying to throw our weight behind it in terms of emotional and practical support to make sure that they feel held and that the organization really takes these allegations very seriously.
A couple of questions. Was the abuse by a staff member or fellow pupils? It was staff member.
This was these alleged abusers were staff members. There's two of them.
Right. And Anonymous says... a few people have come forward to me. Please, can you ask Rabbi Sif how they can come forward, who they should be reaching out to?
So they can reach out to me directly. I'm the one who's fielding these queries and questions and allegations. So people are welcome to reach out to my PA, Audrey DeBrain. I'm happy to share those her email address with you, Howard.
We'll do that towards the end. So if I just say it now, the email address, and then we'll go over it again.
Okay, no problem. It's debraina@sabg.co.za. So debraina@sabje.co.za.
And if you didn't get that, all you need to do is just message me, 061-895-1019, and I will send you that email address. Can we talk about you say that these are allegations. Has there been corroboration of the allegations?
So obviously this is now an ongoing investigation. So we don't have all the facts, and we can't say that the facts are proven per se. But dealing with this victim, getting the detailed affidavit, there's been some talk on social media platforms around this case in the past, it seems. So he also himself has some evidence that he himself has attained. So we are just throwing our weight behind this, supporting him through this investigation. What we obviously can confirm is that these two people did in fact work for King David during that time period. It seems that the one alleged abuser was in fact in the hostel at the time that this is all led to, have alleged to occurred. So for us, the stars line up, and we're just throwing our weight behind investigating the matter further.
Do you know if there's been, if any of the victims or anyone has tried to make contact before with the school or try to deal with these allegations in an official capacity?
No, so we're not aware of that. Other than this victim who's come forward to us and told us what he has done, and he's been very proactive himself, we're not aware of any other attempts to deal with these particular cases. Bearing in mind, this happened before I was born, Howard. So this is a long time ago. And the investigation has to happen. But at this stage, our basis of information and knowledge we're working off is what this victim's come forward with. We don't have much more than that at this stage.
Yeah, it's interesting to, you mentioned before the damage, the impact that this type of thing has on people. Can you take me through that a little bit? Give me a little bit more sense of what that means.
So the truth is, I've learned a lot through the process of engaging with this person. You know, when you see a person who alleges that this happened over 40 years ago, and they are still so pained and still suffer like they do, it's just traumatic. And I do believe, you know, everyone deals with abuse differently, and this is what we've been advised by our psychosocial advisors on the board, that some people move on and some people rebuild and some people put it behind them and are able to move on, but many aren't, and they live with this pain and this embarrassment, and it's a whole host of very painful emotions that they carry with, and the passage of time doesn't seem to actually help. And in often cases, victims actually believe that these things, or say that these things, ruin their lives forever, and they are really deeply changed by these horrific events. So it's something that we can't minimize, allegations we can't minimize. And again, you know, in the current state and where I am and where the board is at now, we have a duty of care to our students now to make sure that this does not happen. That's the bottom line. And, you know, we can't have more members of our community potentially experiencing these type of things.
What is how engaged do you need to be with the current students around something that happened allegedly 40 years ago?
So it's also a fantastic question. So obviously everything has to be age appropriate. We will be addressing the high school students. I believe it's going to be on Thursday morning. And the view there is not to dwell on this case in particular, but it's to highlight that this happened in the past. But what we want the children to know, our students to know now, is that if there's anything going on, they must come forward. They must speak to management. We have channels of communication. They must use those in order to make sure that this is not happening. That's really our message. So it's not to dwell on this case or get into particulars of this case. The primary school at this stage, we aren't dealing with. We don't believe that bringing up this case is of any benefit to primary school children. But we do have, again, there channels and education programs that we run educating about
abuse. I was going to say, in reality, you're dealing with that as part of education today, something that never happened again back in the 80s. That was something that was never discussed. It was one of those conversations never had.
So it's true. And what you'll see, even in the letter we put it there, we start from as young as grade R. Grade R are 6-year-olds. We're talking to them about what is healthy touch, what is unhealthy touch, who you need to talk to if you're feeling uncomfortable, what do you do with uncomfortable feelings. We work with Kolenu, who's an organization that's well known in South Africa in our Jewish community. We work with them in our younger primary school grades. And you're right. That's the point, is that you have to educate students about these things. And that starts from a very, very young age and really runs the whole way through our education process. In more recent times, we've actually engaged with a company called The Guardian, who are the foremost experts in school safety. They do our background checks and our police checks of our current staff, and they've built a whole comprehensive safeguarding process for students in schools to talk about these things. And we actually have been engaging them for a couple of months now, so I'm quite excited actually that these things are coming together we're able to really bed down a lot of these systems in our schools.
You know, a lot of organizations and unfortunately religious organizations, not just within the Jewish environment, but religious associated organizations are often accused of bearing this, and we've seen it in various churches. We've seen it in religious Jewish community. We see a lot. And to some extent, the automatic assumption is that, what's being hidden here? What is, and I'm verbalizing it because I have no doubt that it's almost like a Pavlovian response that we have to these things. Skepticism. Why are you coming out with that? Why now? Why, and it's almost like we can't help ourselves because we've been taught to be a little bit mistrustful and skeptical around this type of treatment of this type of event in the past. My sense from you is that you are being as open, and our listeners, if you want to know Rabbi Sif's body language, it's open, facing me, talking very comfortably about this. There isn't that sense. How do we dispel that concern for people? Because it will exist. I can tell you it will exist.
And I think I understand that to some extent, particularly in the religious environments or where you've got strong institutions and people in positions of power, for some reason, and I don't know why that is, but that's what's happened around the world, is that you default to, you know, believing the authority figure, be it the rabbi or the priest. And in a way, there's a sense of you trust those people more than the victim. And I think society now is starting to change, Howard, even in the religious community, in the Jewish community. I mean, we've had speakers coming to talk to the Rabbonim around abuse in communities before the community Rabbonim, just to understand that halachically, there's actually a requirement here to support victims and that abuse is not okay and abuse is a crime. So, you know, definitely from where I sit now and in our board and Sabji, we're coming forward, we're being transparent. This is not about, protecting ourselves. It's about supporting potential victims. It's going after alleged criminals. And at the moment, that is our priority.
Right. So the message to people who might have been a victim, what is that message if they're listening and they are weighing up whether they should come forward or not? What is your message to them?
So firstly, I really feel, and I say this, you know, I don't think anybody in today's time, when an event happened 40 or more years ago, can really truly feel the pain of the victims. It was a long time ago. But as best as we possibly can, and I in my personal capacity now, we really, if anyone was abused, we apologize, as we say in the letter. And we really are reaching out. We want those people to come forward. We want to be able to do justice to perpetrators of this and to follow the legal processes and investigations to make sure that people like this can't do this anymore. Those in the past can't get away with it. And in the present, people should know that our schools take this very seriously and we won't tolerate it. So you know, I think if there are any victims who did suffer abuse, our doors are open and they can reach out to us via Audrey, as I mentioned before.
And for parents today listening, parents, teachers listening to this message there.
So I want them to know that our systems are safe as they can be, you know, and we really invest in this, we think about this, we put safeguards in this, we have annual training for our staff on prevention of sexual abuse. We really do as much as we can. I would never be as brazen to say it's impossible that this happens in today's time.
Of course not.
It can happen. Yeah. It does happen. But we really are committed to making a safe environment. And again, if people know of something or if they're hearing thing or if they're suspicious, better safe than sorry. Bring them up. Raise it with a teacher. Raise it with the management of the schools. Raise it with me. I don't think this is the kind of thing people should now sweep under the carpet. If you're suspicious, raise it. The chance is more harm done in not raising it than raising it. So I think that's the message we'd like to leave our parents with today.
And that is where we leave it. Thank you, everybody, for your messages and comments. I think we have definitely covered all aspects of it. Rabbi Ricky Sif, thank you.
Thank you.
As I said, it is important to note that the Board of Education, the Jewish Board of Education, approached us to talk about it. That speaks to their intention to be transparent. It wasn't that we saw the letter and asked them to come and discuss it, and I think that, as I said, does talk to transparency. It talks to the approach that they're taking. Can you give me that email address just so that anybody who needs it is can reach out?
With pleasure. It's DeBruin, DeBruin, DeBruin at sabje.co.za.
And again, if you didn't get that, send me a message and we will certainly send it to you.